Welcome to Blog Talk Radio in high fidelity.
All right, I want to welcome everyone back. Blog Talk Radio, 2 days in a row. That's a good thing. We're going to change tune a little bit today, literally and musically. We had a very interesting show yesterday, but now we're going to go back to something local, something very interesting, especially as residents of Westchester County that we can appreciate. The history is definitely all around us here in White Plains and Westchester County, Connecticut, Fairfield area, and certainly in New York City. When we're walking around, we see some sites here in White Plains that sometimes we just give a casual glance to, a cannon, a little battle memorial, but there is a sort of, there's sort of a continuity that blends them all together. And that, of course, is the Revolutionary War. And about a month and change ago, no, actually more than that, several months ago in the summer, as I was, a friend and I were actually renting bicycles in Connecticut. I do have a bicycle, by the way, but I needed one on the spot since it was locked in my storage cellar. And a very interesting and fine gentleman came to the rescue. His name is Sal Lilienthal, and he is he's the proprietor of the Bicycle Tour Company in Kent, Connecticut. And I am going to bring him in right now. Sal, I want to welcome you to Blog Talk Radio.
Hey, thanks, Anthony, and I appreciate you inviting me to talk on your show.
Yes, I was looking forward to it. It's sorry I couldn't do it sooner.
Well, it seemed, as we've been doing our back and forth the last month, it seemed to be an appropriate time to talk about the Battle of White Plains since the anniversary for the 240th is coming up this week on Friday.
Yeah, and I have to admit, I was not aware of that myself, of the particular anniversary, which, given that I'm a resident of White Plains, I thought I would be, that someone would broadcast it.
So when I was preparing for the show, so I wrote a book on revolutionary battles, as you discussed, and I was preparing for the show. I thought it would be best if I just give a quick overview of the American Revolution before the Battle of the White Plains, and then we'll talk a little bit in detail about the battle itself and the different sites, in White Plains and the markers. And if someone wants to call in and ask about, you know, where this house was or where that marker is, we could talk about that. And then, you know, describe how General Washington and the Continental Army kind of sort of escaped from White Plains in the battle and the onslaught of the Hessians and the British, and what happened, you know, over the next couple of years, and especially in the several months that followed at Trenton and Princeton. It was very critical for the Americans that in that time. Does that sound okay?
Right. Yes, absolutely. I definitely would like to put it in context. Obviously, there was such a major campaign, as I was discovering on various sites in New York and New Jersey alone. Before we start, though, why don't you just tell us really quick about your book and where people might be able to find it?
Right. Well, I have the book at my office here in Connecticut, in Kent. People also can get it on Amazon. It's available at a number of bookstores in the area as well.
Okay, that's good. And I'll be sure to post that later on with the show notes and everything to give a more direct link. But yes, let's definitely get started. Put this in some context here. The war at the time, we're dateline 1776, and where are we at now?
So basically, I'm actually going to bring people a little bit further back. So I'm going to start during the French and Indian War. So during the 1750s, we were a colony of Britain. All the people in the area were loyal British subjects, George Washington, everybody. And then the French and the British were battling for control of North America, and that was the French and Indian War. And then the British won. And then you had so basically, our side won because we were British then, And, you know, so the war ended in about 1763, and then you have all these members of Parliament trying to figure out how they're going to pay for the French and Indian War. And, you know, part of the plan was to have the American colonists pay for the war, since they were the beneficiaries of the fighting. And that's okay. when all those taxes came in, you know, all the Stamp Act and the Intolerable Act, all those things we learn in school. And yes. so that period in between 1763 and 1775, tensions really began to increase, especially, you know, all over the colonies, and especially around Boston. You had, the Boston Massacre and the Boston Tea Party. So the Boston Tea Party was a result of the British, you know, putting a tax on tea. And then everyone knows what happened. Some Sons of Liberty dressed up as Indians and dumped tea in Boston Harbor over the higher taxes. There was a quartering act. The British, after the Boston Tea Party, the British brought in soldiers in force to Boston. Right. And then, yeah, the Battle of Lexington and Concord, when the British tried to take arms from Concord. They marched from Boston. They sailed a short section through Boston Harbor and then marched, and then he had a standoff in Lexington, and then they tried to seize the arms in Concord, and then he had the Battle of Lexington and Concord. And basically right after that, everybody, was really upset. And then you had many colonists from all of the, because we weren't the United States at that time, 1775 in April, you had, you know, everybody from the colonies, the militias, they were all surrounding the British at Boston.
Right.
That was the beginning. You hear that. I think it's important that we just review the history a little bit. Doesn't that help?
Oh, you absolutely. Know, yeah.
Right.
I've actually walked the Freedom Trail, but it would help to hear it in words from you as well.
Right. So basically, just as a background to the Battle of White Plains. So, so now you have a situation where, 1775 in April, Battle of Lexington, Concord. Then the Second Continental Congress meets. So all these things are kind of happening simultaneously. So you have militia from all the colonies surrounding the British in Boston. Then you have the Second Continental Congress meet. They appoint George Washington as the commander-in-chief, and he's heading up towards Boston to assume command of the Continentals. While he's going up there, you have the Battle of Bunker Hill, where the Patriots in that area build a redoubt on Breed's Hill. It's very near Bunker Hill, but closer to Boston. And then you had that whole battle. The Americans actually lost the battle, and the British gained control of the hill, but it was, they call it a paretic victory, where the British had enormous losses, and it wasn't going to be an easy time for the British after that. So right. basically, for a number of months, it was a standoff. And then you had, so the way the standoff was solved was that, this is another long story that I won't get into right now, but basically, Benedict Arnold and Ethan Allen, the Green Mountain Boys, captured artillery at Fort Ticonderoga.
Okay.
And then that artillery was brought by Henry Knox to Boston. They positioned it on Dorchester Heights, which is near South Boston, overlooks Boston. The British saw that the artillery was there. They left Boston. Okay. Washington okay. and the Continentals knew that they left, but they were going to be back in force. Okay. So the British left and they went to Nova Scotia, to Halifax, to regroup. And okay. everyone knew that they were going to attack New York City next. So Washington, you know, so now we're getting close to White Plains. Okay, we're moving to New York City. So this is July and August. So that was, in other words, 1775, April, Lexington and Concord, the Siege of Boston. Over that winter, they bring the cannon from Fort Ticonderoga And then the British land up leaving Boston in March. And then by July, the Americans moved down, June and July, the Americans moved down to New York. And they call it, you know, that Long Island to them was Brooklyn at the time,
right,
and lower Manhattan. And then the British also move all their troops to Staten Island. And there's, you know, over 30 to 40,000 British troops and seamen at that time.
Did the British realize at that time, by going back to Nova Scotia, that they were giving the Americans a head start, which could be a disadvantage for them?
No, they were just, it was kind of like, we're going to win this thing and we're just going to regroup. And Boston's actually not that important. We're going to take New York City. I don't think they were really happy when they saw the artillery positioned on Dorchester Heights, because they knew that with that artillery, the Americans, the Patriots had it, you know, a tactical advantage at that moment in time. And okay. so they were like, you know what, we're not going to win this one. Let's just leave, you know, because we're going to basically get everything bombarded if we try to fight them right now because of the poor position that we have. And they had, and they might have tried attacking them if the Battle of Bunker Hill didn't happen, but they had so many losses at the Battle of Bunker Hill, they just decided to leave and regroup. But that was a really good question. So they so they regroup, and then they're reinforced, and they position. So Staten Island became like the major British stronghold, and then Washington was based in lower Manhattan, you know, so Wall Street, that was actually the wall of the fort. And,
Correct.
And then, and his headquarters was actually on Brooklyn Heights. So basically,
you sort of got a triangle there. Yeah. Brooklyn,
right,
Manhattan,
I'm trying
with the actual,
Well, so the section between Brooklyn Heights, and lower Manhattan, in the Wall Street Financial District, and you have the Brooklyn Bridge there, that's going to become that location's going to be critical, because what happens is the British basically, so the Americans are positioned at Brooklyn, and the British attack, they basically, you know, row or sail across where the Verrazano Narrows Bridge is,
right,
and they attack the Americans. I mean, there's a lot of detail to that battle I'm not going to get into right now, because we want to try to focus on the Battle of White Plains. At any rate, so the British, you know, in full force attack that area in Brooklyn. And they force the Americans, you know, all the way back to Brooklyn Heights. Okay? And then...
is this primarily a water-based battle? Is it a land battle? Both?
It's the Americans are on the land. It's a really good question. It's both.
Okay.
But the actual battle itself is on land. Now there is, you know, where the Greenwood Cemetery is, it's a high point in Brooklyn. That's where Washington at the top of that, you know, overlooked the harbor and Staten Island. They could see the British coming. Park Slope, that was one of the battle areas. It stretched almost the full length of Brooklyn. But like at the end of August, the British basically forced the Americans all the way to Brooklyn Heights, and they decided like they're going to get the Americans the next day. And then, basically the thing is the wind was coming, from north to south. So it was difficult to sail up the river for the British and cut the Americans off that area around where the Brooklyn Bridge is. So in the middle of the night, the Americans, the entire army, rode across the East River.
Which,
and
at
in the morning,
time,
there
it
was
a remarkable feat.
It was a remarkable feat. It was, the thing is, Washington only surrendered once, and that was during the French and Indian War. He never did it again, and he always made sure he had an escape route. And he had this all set up, and the primary soldiers that were involved with the transportation were Glover's Marblehead fishermen from Massachusetts. And there were also, I'll talk about that a little bit later when we talk about the Battle of White Plains, because they were involved in that too. and they were also involved along the Delaware River, just kind of a little foreshadow of what we're going to talk about in a couple minutes. So at any rate, so this is the end of August. So now, so the British are like, so basically if the British were able to trap the Americans at that point in time, it basically would have been like, it would have been over before it started, the whole thing, the whole revolution. We're not, you know, so it's the end of August. We're not actually a country until like July 4th, 1776, which is, you know, like a month. Right. So this is like right at that period of time. So Washington wasn't there until.
And the armies are still like separate armies from individual or separate militiae of different states. It's not like the army yet or the Navy. These are conglomerations of different troops from different places, correct?
Correct. That's exactly what it was. You know, so in a lot of ways, you know, so basically each, you know, colony or state, you know, provided the supplies for the militia that was sent. You know, they didn't have bayonets. Give them like that. The only artillery they had is the ones that they captured at the Ticonderoga, pretty much. So that was all very important. So now the Americans, so they got through the first, you know, kind of hoop, so to speak, or second, you know, I don't know if that's a really great way to describe it, but they got through this section and were able to survive. Yeah. You know, so basically that's, you know, surviving, you know, the exit strategy, master the exit strategy here.
Yeah.
So now they're on Lower Manhattan. And so you can see them starting to move in the direction of White Plains already, up that way.
Right.
Okay. So the British, so now we're starting a real cat and mouse thing. So the British are at Brooklyn, they have all their men on Staten Island, plus they have all the ships. So what's the next step? So now they try to, you know, so a couple weeks later, Washington, they retreat back, you know, into northern Manhattan, and the British try to, they come over by Kipps Bay, it's like 34th Street on the East River. That's where they land to come after the Americans. So there were a couple of forts that protected the Hudson River. So obviously the Hudson River was the major artery during that time frame. As it is now, but very more important then. So there were two forts that guarded the Hudson River. One was Fort Lee. Everyone knows what that is. The name sounds very familiar. Yep. That was an actual fort from the American Revolution, named after Charles Lee, an American general. And the other was Fort Washington. And Fort Washington, you don't hear about all that much, but it was very important in those days. Okay, right. So Fort Washington was at the highest point on Manhattan. And it's literally, it's like 300 or 400 feet high. And it's basically, it's like 181st Street, somewhere in there, like just north of the George Washington Bridge. So where the George Washington Bridge,
think I know there's a playground occupying that site now, right?
There's a park.
There's
so it's like
a park. Yeah.
Tryon Park. Yeah. So it's just south of there, but basically that whole area, but there was an actual fort at that site. And so that's going to be very important when we talk about the Battle of White Plains, and I'll explain that a little bit later. So Washington, so the British, you know, basically they land at Kipps Bay. Washington's army starts moving, you know, north through Manhattan. He's actually headquartered later on. The Jamal Mansion, it's like 161st Street. It's actually still there. And it used to be, it was also the headquarters from General Knyphausen, and he was the Hessian general later on. So that's a really cool place.
And they are, just to be sure, they are moving by land at this point.
Primarily. Right, so the Americans, so they're moving by land. So the British come 34th Street, the Americans are going to northern Manhattan. So this is like middle of September. And then, you know, a number of things happen. You know, Nathan Hale, he's a spy, Patriot spy. Does that name sound familiar?
Oh, absolutely, yes.
Right, so in this time frame, he's captured as a spy. And there's a battle at Harlem Heights, right on Broadway where Columbia University is. you know, the, so basically it was like a running battle. So it was like this, the section of Broadway near that area. So where Grant's Tomb is, that was a section of the battle too. At any rate, there was a person named from Connecticut. His name was Thomas Nolte, and he was a commanding officer from Hale. They basically died within a week of each other. You know, Hale was hung in Manhattan as a spy, American spy, and Knowlton, the commanding officer, he died at the Battle of Harlem Heights. And it actually, the Battle of Harlem Heights actually gave the Americans a little bit of hope during this campaign, because they were able to kind of have a little bit of a draw with the British and able to fend them off a little bit. And it bought them a little bit of time.
It seemed, as I read through the history, that that was a sort of one of the few high points in this period. Things weren't overall going well, it seemed.
Yes, basically they got annihilated at the Battle of Island, or the Battle of Brooklyn, people call it both. Then they were, you know, being forced, you know, it was basically an overwhelming British force. I mean, so there was about 30 or 40,000 redcoats. You know, we probably had, you know, 15 to 25,000 Americans. So now, so Washington, as we talked before, he escaped from Brooklyn. Okay, so this, so now we're talking around the middle of September. Okay. Middle of the end of September there, you know, northern Manhattan, 1776. And so but General Howe, he's the chief of the Redcoats. So he decides that he's going to trap Washington on Manhattan. So what they do, so what happens is Washington's moving north. So there was, so the northern part of Manhattan is a little, the geography is slightly different now than it was then, because there was a canal where the Spuyten Duyvil Bridge is, you know, near there. So
I'm very, yes, very familiar. I actually did a report on that back in college.
It was rerouted. Right. There's a call like Marble Hill. Anyways, at any rate, there was a canal dug through, and there was a place near that location called Kingsbridge. Yes. And that's where the American army crossed into the Bronx, going north.
Right.
So the thing is, so the American army's going north, and then the British Navy and Army, they want to sail around and trap Washington's army on Manhattan, okay? So what they do is they leave, they go through Hell's Gate, and they land at Throg's Neck, okay? And they want to come around and trap the Americans. But what happens is a couple, and in those days, believe it or not, they called it Frog's Neck.
Oh.
You can look it up. I know they did. That's what they, both the Americans and the British called it that.
That's interesting.
Yeah, right. I know.
The Hell's Gate was treacherous at that time as well, correct?
They called it Hell's Gate for a reason.
Yeah.
And then.
It had not been made too navigable just yet.
I coach one of the local crew teams, and it's just like, I get it when the water's rough. It's not easy, you know, for the rowers, but, you know, so I could appreciate all, you know, people being on the water like that. So at any rate, they, you know, Howe and the army, they land at Throg's Neck, and it's marshy. There's no real easy way to get in. And then there's a group of American militia. There's not that many of them. There's about like 20 or 50 like sharpshooters, and they're pinning thousands of British troops, you know, in the area of Throg's Neck, and the British keep on landing there, and then after 5 or 6 days they decide to leave. And they're like, this isn't going to work. There's no real way to get the army through, because you're transporting 14,000 people, you know, over a small bridge that the Patriots just destroyed. It's not really, it's not that good for them. So, but in the meantime, the Americans are able to get, they basically come up Route 100, you know, through Yonkers, up through Westchester to White Plains. And the reason why they chose White Plains is that, because they didn't have the dam you have in Valhalla, you know, right north of, you know, so that obviously was there. The Bronx River was bigger than a little bit. The area was more marshy and swampland. Then there were these hills. So it was a good location from Washington's standpoint as a defensive location, because they could position, you know, artillery on the hills, and they're good places to hide. And the British, if they want to attack one of those locations, they'd have to go through a marsh or swampland, you know, all of that. And, okay, so then, so the Americans get positioned in White Plains, and I'll talk about that in a little bit more detail. But, okay, so now, let's go back to the British. So the British are, you know, so they landed at Throg's Neck. They didn't work. So then they land in force at Pelham.
Okay, at the Pell site, I guess, or
yeah,
is that,
and it at Pelham Point there. There's
right,
a beach.
The point.
Right.
Yep.
At any rate, so they land, and there's about 10,000 redcoats land, and that group, the Glover, the fishermen from Marblehead, they actually fend off, it's like 700 or 500 or 750 of them fend off the British Army for a while. Can you hear me okay?
Yeah, I can hear you. I'm just, I actually read about the fishermen group. Were they organized in any way, or was this just kind of like a group of people getting together?
They were from Massachusetts, where Marblehead is. It's right on the coast. So they were, you know, they were used to being around the water and rowing and sailing like that. But they were good fighters as well. And so at any rate, right. So the thing is that you have loyalists and you have, you know, the patriots. And, you know, sometimes it's difficult to distinguish, you know, who's who. But the thing is, they had spies and we had spies. And we were monitoring. Right. You know, it's kind of hard for them to hide all those ships and all those redcoats. So we, you know, everyone knew where they were. So, right. You know, so we tried to, you know, keep an eye on them this whole time.
Monitor. So you could say that we have the spying advantage, if you will, because they're big and bulky and, you know, the Americans are a little more versatile.
Well, that's a good question. There's a whole, the whole spy network on both sides was pretty intricate. You know, and a spy might just be, you know, a waiter or a waitress at a tavern, and they overhear something and they tell someone something else, and the message gets back to the higher ups, stuff like that. And that's kind of how, or then you might get someone who's, you know, goes into the camp. You know, after what happened with Nathan Hale, the whole spy system changed. We really went kind of undercover, as opposed to like, okay, you're a spy, you're going to do this. And we used a lot more people on the ground and were a lot more careful. For sure. Right. I mean, that whole TV show Turn, have you watched that at all?
Unfortunately, no. I'd like to one day catch up on a few.
So that's about the Culper Ring and with Benjamin Talmadge, you know, heading in. Right. That's a whole other story, but it's pretty accurate and it gives a pretty good background. So if people were interested in watching that, I would say that that's really cool.
Yeah, so, definitely.
So, okay, so here, you want to go back to battle? Okay, so...
Just to put everything in perspective, the Americans are now ensconced in this area. They've got their fortifications, and they're sort of awaiting the arrival of the British.
So they know the British are coming after them. So they're right. Basically trying to get a strong defensive position. And they chose White Plains because of what we discussed before with the hills and the marshes and then the river. It would be difficult for them to attack. So they wanted, Washington wanted to choose the location of the battle. And he felt that this was a good location from that standpoint.
Right.
So then basically from Pelham, the British and the Hessians, so they had these hired mercenaries from Germany. They were called the Hessians from that area in Germany. They also fought together.
Right.
So they basically came up, you know, Route 125 and then Mamaroneck Avenue. So that's a little bit south of the center of White Plains. Right?
Right.
Okay,
yeah,
so...
Yeah, it's coming in sort of from the, okay,
so now,
from the east.
A little bit from the east. Okay. So, right. Yeah. So they're coming. So basically now we're, you know, middle of October, end of October, October 28th. Okay. So now this is the morning of the first day of the battle. There was actually, it landed about 4 or 5 days. So they, They make their way up, so the Americans know they're coming. So they come up Mamaroneck Avenue, and there's the intersection between Route 22 and Mamaroneck Avenue.
Yes.
No, does that sound familiar? Okay, so
yes,
that's where
I work there.
Is that where you work, close to that location?
I work in that general area. It's much more populated now than it was then.
Right. Well, at any rate, that's where. So in other words, the Americans knew the British were coming. They come down Route 22.
Right.
From
and that was
the center
the
of White
Post Road.
It's a post road, right? Exactly. Yep. So let me. Okay, so basically, that's where they first. That was the first engagement, kind of like midday or morning. Now, it was Indian summer that day. And that's, it's like, what's the big deal? It's Indian summer, but it's going to be important when we get to the next couple of days of the battle. So let me just describe like where the Americans were set up. But that was like right. When they first met, October 28th. And then, so the American, the right flank of the Americans was on Chatterton Hill. So they had artillery and Alexander Hamilton, he was there, young Alexander Hamilton. So that was the American right, and the American left was near Silver Lake. So you had, there's a Merritt Hill by Underhill Avenue. Does that sound familiar?
Absolutely, yep.
Merritt Hill, Silver Lake, okay.
Yeah.
Right, okay. So at any rate,
they're not near the lake, though. They're more uphill from the lake, let's say.
So, they're both. There's a hill, Merritt Hill, but there was another hill called Hatfield Hill, which is on the other side of the lake. They were also there. Okay.
Okay. Covering both sides.
So basically, and then it went, so that was basically the, where the trenches were, there was trenches. And then the center of the, their line was on Broadway, and there's a marker there, across from Pace University by Canal Ave. Okay,
yes,
is that familiar?
Yes, it does. Yeah, that's the cannon marker, and I believe there's been gatherings or commemorations held there for a number of years.
Right, so basically that's the center line. Just to give people an idea, like, you know, how this whole thing was set up. So what happened, so after this first kind of engagement and skirmish, the morning of October 28th, 1776, you know, after that, two things happened. One is, so the British and the Hessians divided their force, and they knew that the Americans were on the Chatterton Hill. So the Hessians basically went straight to the southern part of the hill. Now, this is the cavalry, the Hessian cavalry. They're called hussars. I just use the word cavalry because I think it's easier. People understand that. So they had horses, and they had swords, things like that. And then the British... the main army went up Route 22, the post road, and then they forded across the Bronx River where that cannon marker is.
Correct.
You know, okay, so that's very right. So basically, so what happened was, you there?
Well, yeah, I'm here. Yeah, now I was going to just jump in and ask you real quick. Could, you know, obviously Chatterton and the other location are high points. Do they have, let's say, visibility on each other? Are they able to somehow communicate or at least lock view on each other? Of course, that's not possible today, but...
Right. Well, in those... It's a good question. And in those days, you know, they obviously didn't have the buildings. The area, this whole area was basically, there weren't any woods or trees. Everything was pretty much, you had some areas where there were brush, but... it was mostly farmland. That's a good question. Could you see from Chatterton Hill to Merritt Hill? And could they communicate with each other? That's a good question. I don't know that 100%. I guess in other words, their way of communicating was you'd take a horse. There's a message, and someone, you know, with a fast horse would go there, and it might take whatever. So it might take them, 20 minutes or 15 minutes to ride their horse to the entire their side. So that's how they would send messages, things like that.
Yes, that's a good point.
Yeah,
sometimes at their risk.
Right. Well, right. Yeah, there was definitely, well, that's a good question. So the areas to the coast were mostly controlled by the British, and the inland areas were mostly controlled by the Patriots.
Okay. That's
so about,
that puts a little more in perspective. Yeah, so definitely.
I mean, you know, in general, you had about a third of the people, you know, who were loyalists, Tories, and had a third of the people that were, you know, patriots. And then there was about a third that were undecided. It's kind of like, you know, elections nowadays. You have, you know, a third of the people that are, you know, definitely in one camp, a third of the people in another camp, and then you have that group that's undecided. So it's sort of like that. I don't know if that makes sense.
Right. Oh, but, yeah. It's when I first heard that, I was kind of, when I heard that, you know, summary first, I was amazed. But then I'm thinking, well, you know, this was a major change for people. You know, it's not easy to say, are we going to, even nowadays, if you bring up something like secession, you know, you're not going to get anywhere near 100%. Agreement on something like that. So in retrospect, it's definitely understandable.
Yeah, so right. So, you know, people are like, you know, in other words, you know, oh, this, you know, this day, you know, the Americans are in my farm fields, I'm pro-patriot. You know, the next day the British are in the fields, you know, you're, you know, you know, that happened too a little bit. That happened
too.
Yeah,
of course.
So what happened was, is that, so the Americans are positioned, the militia on, the Chatterton, and the British, they ford across the river and they attack the Americans up Chatterton Hill. And then the Hessians from the south, they basically collapse the American line with the horses, the cavalry.
Hmm.
So they lose.
Okay.
Right. So then the British gained control. Yeah. So basically, the Americans. Yeah. Go ahead. Does this make sense?
No, I was going to say this is so right off the bat. Now that sounds like it's a bit devastating for the Americans, but perhaps not.
Well, it is. It is right away. Okay. No, because it was the battle was pretty. You know, so it was basically, you know, the whole thing was like an hour or so, but the actual fighting part, level of intensity, was like about 15 or 20 minutes. That's it. You know, when you read about it, they say it was warmly contested for about 15 minutes. So, but I mean, you can imagine, like, you know, a whole regiment of cavalry coming through at once. They're going to be able to, you know, run through everything quickly, run through the Americans pretty quickly. So, yeah. And then, so they escape. Is this enough detail or too much detail?
No, I think it's just about right. I mean, you set a good background here, and now we're leading up to, you know, we've got the fortifications in place. Everybody's planted in position. And now this is the moment of truth for the Battle of White Plains.
Right. So right. Exactly. So then the British and the Hessians, they force the Americans off at Chatterton Hill. Okay, so that's the American right. And they basically retreat, you know, back, you know, to where Purdy Hill, you know where the Purdy House is now?
Yes, that's where it currently is.
Where it currently is. So it used to be on Spring Street, a little bit closer into town. Do you know where Spring Street is? You do?
Yeah,
okay,
so that's where the Marriott is, I believe, now, or one of those hotels.
Okay, and then, but they moved it to that Purdy Hill's current location, you know, I think in the 70s. And they did a really great job fixing it up. So where that is was the location where General Putnam was during the Battle of the White Plains that day. So they basically retreated to that area. So now General Howe, the British general, so that's the American right.
General Putnam is who now? What's his function here?
So General Putnam, he's one of the senior level American generals. He fought in the French and Indian War, and he's in his 60s. He's one of the more he fought at the Battle of Bunker Hill, and he was one of the generals that fought at the Battle of White Plains as well.
Right.
He was
serving under Washington then.
Serving Washington. Everyone's under Washington. So, I mean, so in other words, the Americans had about 14,000. The British also had about 14,000 troops, like that. Okay. So basically, the British, they attacked the American right, and then, so first they had that skirmish like we talked about, coming up Amerenac Avenue. So that's the first engagement. The second engagement, where most of the markers are about Chatterton Hill. And then a general, how the British general wants to attack the American left. So they went for the right, and then they want to attack the left. So then they attack the British on Merritt Hill by Underhill Avenue.
Okay.
So they come across. So that's basically what happened on October 28th.
Okay, so that's
and they didn't really gain much ground.
Right. The first day of the battle, as it's recognized.
The first day, right. So now, okay. But the real goal for the British is to capture the entire American army. You know, so even though they might win one of these skirmishes or win the hill, that's not their goal. The goal is to stop the American Revolution. And as long as that army exists, the American Revolution is still going. Right. And Washington was obviously a key player in that. So this, so from that standpoint, they're not winning. From the standpoint of gaining the hill, they won. From the standpoint of the cavalry just pushed over the Americans, they won. But they're still there.
Right.
So they do the Chatterton Hill, then they attack Merritt Hill, and the Americans are too well entrenched on Merritt Hill, and the British don't really gain much ground at all. So they decide, okay, let's just wait. We'll go after them the next day. So then the next day it rained, pouring rain. So you can't really move anything around when it's raining. You know, you can't really fight when it's raining because the gunpowder is wet and you can't fight. You can't shoot your cannon. You can't shoot your muskets. You know, it just doesn't work. So then
that's both sides, of course.
It's both sides. Yeah. So at any rate, it rains for like 2 days, crazy. And in the meantime, Washington was, the headquarters was at Purdy House. They had where the marker, the cannon marker we talked about, that was the original lines. And then they moved back to North White Plains and then the Miller Farmhouse. So then he moves back to the Miller Farmhouse. That's his headquarters there during this time period. So you have October 29th, October 30th, they're back there. So
Washington's in the house now. That becomes his momentary headquarters. Is Elijah Miller sort of, was he previously allied with the Americans? What was his function?
The sense that I get is that he was. Okay. But that's a question. I think that's another story, too. And then, I mean, the Westchester and the White Plains Historical Society, they've done extensive work on all of this. And when you came up here to Kent, a month ago, a couple months ago, we talked about that there was talk about what they might do with that location because it's so important historically, for this battle and its place with the American Revolution. And it's kind of a cool building, too, in my opinion.
I enjoyed it. I like that it's the last, it's basically the last thing that's left in its original position in White Plains from the Revolutionary era.
Right. So even if they decide to move it, I hope that they, leave a marker there to say this is where the original site of the Miller House was. But it would be cool. A lot of times, historical sites, they'll fix something up and they'll move it and make it into a tourist center. For example, the Nathan Hale Schoolhouse in New London, they probably moved that five or six times. And they use it as American Revolution, and it's a marquee tourist center place for them, and that's they might want to do something like with that location for that as well. So
I'm fairly confident they'll do something good, and it's the intent, I believe, is to move it to Kensico Plaza. So it wouldn't be physically
too far, but location.
Yeah, visible and can be maintained properly.
So. Right. That sounds good. Sounds like very appropriate.
If they do it, that would probably be the best thing. But you're right. I agree. A marker should go at the original location just for continuity.
Right, right, exactly. So now we're October 29th, 30th, it rains, the Army moves back, and they move back to Hatfield Hill, that's near where the Baldwin Farm is. Okay. Is that Miller Hill? Does your name sound familiar?
I'm losing a little perspective now. The Baldwin Farm, that's north?
Okay,
or?
That's near Hall Avenue. It's on the other side of Silver Lake. Sunset.
Okay. Yes. Okay. Now I'm back in. Yes, I've got it.
Paul Ave.
I know.
Okay. So there's a hill up there.
Right.
I don't know if that makes sense, but at any rate, so they positioned themselves, the Americans, on Miller Hill. That's near the Miller Farmhouse. That's right off of the Virginia.
Right. I know. Yep.
Road.
I know exactly
right.
Where.
And there was another place, Travis Hill Park.
Yes.
Does that sound familiar?
I'm familiar with. Yes.
Okay,
that one
so
I
that
know.
Was another location that the Americans were positioned.
Right.
Okay, so the Americans retreat back into this area. Again, it's the hills and the swamps.
Yeah.
Okay, and then the British move forward into this area. So they attack, the new... So now it's like now you're probably not going to believe this, but this is the story. This is what happened. So basically,
okay.
So the Americans are very, very entrenched in this area. And now we're October 31st, Halloween, right? right. So according to the story,
it's funny, but it coincides.
It coincides. Well, get this. So the Americans, okay. They have the artillery on these hills, very well positioned. And, the British and the Hessians, they think they're just going to, ride the horses over there and just go get them. And they ride over there, and guess what? According to the story, one of the cannonballs decapitates one of the Hessian soldiers.
Hmm.
And that's how Washington Irving got the story of the Headless Horseman, according to the story.
I never knew that.
White. Yeah. You go, look,
I never
yeah.
knew that.
Hey, so it happened, according to this, what I read, it happened... Like on that day, October 31st, 1776, the
wow,
legend of
remarkable.
Mean, so isn't that, well, that's a story. So, I mean, all these places are like where Washington Irving lived and where Sleepy Hollow and Tarrytown is, they're all very close, right?
Yes, absolutely. So one legend is based on another actually, or well, one legend
right.
based on a true historic event.
Well,
wow.
Like legends of like the Headless Horseman and things like that. There's different folklore and cultures, but like that's according to the story, that's where this was supposed to happen. I read that place. At any rate, so
okay.
But it coincides with the time of Halloween and all that as well. So
yeah.
But the actual last, day of the battle was October 31st, November 1st. So the British, they attacked and the Hessians attacked that area of Hatfield Hill on the other side of Silver Lake, and then the Travis Hill.
I'm looking at it right now, actually, on Google Maps, and I see its proximity to the river, and it appears to be sort of at a high point.
Right, and then there's another one, Miller Hill, and that's where Glover was again.
Yes, that I
Glover
see in perspective.
Right, and according to the marker on Miller Hill, the last shots fired were November 4th, 1776.
So about a week.
Right, so the first, right, exactly. So you have from October 28th to November 4th. So that's like the whole series of the battle. So, but now, during this time frame, There's a development going on in Manhattan. Remember that Fort Washington we talked about before?
Yes, yes.
Okay, so the Americans, now Washington didn't want to leave that fort there manned. And they left that fort manned with about 3,000 soldiers. So basically you have the British Army and then the Americans are very well entrenched at White Plains.
Right.
And at the same time, you have this fort with 3,000 Americans on Manhattan. And from the British standpoint, that's kind of low-hanging fruit. So they basically were not going to be able to get the Americans where they are at White Plains. So So they just leave, and they just decide to go after Fort Washington. So now, you know, and so they go after Fort Washington, and then they capture the three, you know, it was very, very hardly fought battle at Fort Washington. It was a disaster for the Americans. Most of the people that were captured went under prison ships. Mm-hmm. I mean, the only kind of good thing that happened is because it was there and available, it gave a British a chance to, you know, to look at the other direction and the Americans to escape. Okay. So that's the good that came out of it. So,
but at the cost of those men.
Definitely at the cost of those men. I mean, that's kind of my perspective on it. It's just like, well, if that wasn't there, maybe I don't think that they would have been able to capture the whole army at White Plains, but right. A combination of the Americans being, you know, entrenched so much in northern White Plains and, you know, from the British perspective, the fort being so vulnerable on Manhattan, you know, it gave the Americans a chance to escape. So that's, right. You know, so that's, okay. So now we're like in the middle of November.
Okay.
17. Yeah. So I talked about what happened before the Battle of White Plains and then the Battle of White Plains. Did we cover that pretty well, or is there anything else
absolutely.
We could talk?
No, well, we got about 10 minutes to go. I think we've covered it in just enough detail that people can kind of go out there if they listen to this and they have the locations from you and kind of the perspective. You can't imagine it now. You see the markers, but you can't imagine like a line of troops from Silver Lake
right.
up to Chatterton Hill. It's remarkable.
If you look at the map, it's almost a straight line across.
Right. No, and I just did actually. And yes, you're right.
Right. So,
yeah.
So now something, so basically what happens is, so now the British are back on General Howe, the main commanding officer for the British, and Knyphausen, they're back at New York. And the Americans survived White Plains. And the army's pretty much intact, but they lose people. So then Washington divides. This is one of Washington's mistakes during the Revolution. He divides his forces, and he leaves about 7,000 soldiers with his second in command. His name was Charles Lee, in the White Plains area in Westchester. And he basically takes almost everybody else with him to kind of, through, you know, they cross. So after the Battle of White Plains, they cross the Hudson River near where Stony Point is, Haverstraw.
Okay.
Does that sound familiar? Anyway, they went up a little bit, just to the Bear Mountain Bridge. There was a ferry there. They cross. They basically go through New Jersey. Mm-hmm. So this is like, you know, November, and then they go all the way across, and there is a. Then they get to the end of New Jersey, this other side of New Jersey, the Delaware River, and then they cross the Delaware River, okay? And they're there during December, okay? December 1776. And the Hessians...
And now we're on the cusp of another event.
Right. But this is really important because this is the survival of the army and what's going to happen next. And he only has like 1,500 or 2,000 people with him there. And he sent dispatches. So basically, you know, a month or 6 weeks or 2 months pass. And, you know, they go across New Jersey and they're in Pennsylvania, just on the other side of the Delaware River. And he sends dispatches to Charles Lee, who has 7,000 soldiers. And he's saying, hey, send some of the guys here because we need more because we're going to do an attack on Trenton. But he doesn't really send them, and he finally sends some. At any rate, they have about, you know, 1,500, 2,000 guys, 2,000 soldiers, and their enlistments are supposed to be up at the end of 1776.
Okay.
And the Delaware River, and so they decide, and there's that famous painting of Washington crossing the Delaware River.
Yes.
And that was for the depiction. The actual site doesn't look like that, but that was the depiction. So December 25th, 1776, Christmas Day, they crossed the Delaware River. The same group that was at White Plains, but, not as many of them. And there is a Hessian outpost at Trenton. And do you remember, like, we talked about the Hessian cavalry, the Hazars, they attacked the Americans on Chatterton Hill?
Yes, exactly.
With General Rawl? Those exact soldiers are at Trenton, the ones that attacked Chatterton Hill for the Americans.
So both sides are now...
We're getting a little karma here.
Yeah.
Right. So then, can you hear me okay?
All perfectly, yes. We still got about 5 minutes, so you have some time.
Right. Okay. So I'll just wrap this up. Okay. So then the Washington attacks Trenton. They capture the 900 Hessians that were there, including Rawl. And he actually dies that day of a mortal wound. So it was this huge victory. Like, we won one. We actually captured them all at Trenton. It was an enormous, after running and playing the cat and mouse and getting defeated in this battle and that battle, aside from the one that you mentioned at Harlem Heights, basically they're all losses. And finally, they captured this professional army at Trenton. So, and Trenton is also basically along the Delaware River. And they were all, and they had the artillery. They're bringing the artillery. They captured at Ticonderoga way back in 1775, like the year before. They bring all this stuff with them the whole time. Knox, everybody, and so there. We usually talk about Trenton and Princeton, but there was a little battle there in between. So this was December 25th, 1776. So Americans capture the Hessians at Trenton. And then, so basically, the British and the Hessians, they don't fight during the winter. But after the Americans captured the Hessians, the British, they're like, okay, we're in trouble, and they're going to send some people after us. And they knew that they were. So they're getting ready for them. So there's this little creek, a stream that flows into the Delaware River at Trenton. It's called the Assunpink Creek. And the Americans position artillery on the other side of this stream when the British come to fight the Americans at Trenton after what they did. So the British come, Cornwallis, all of them, the name Cornwallis, they come into Trenton. And so basically they're waiting for the Americans. So now it's January, so it's a week later. It's like, so this whole thing happened at Trenton, December 25th, 26th. The British come down, it's a week later, January 2nd. The Americans blast the British with all this artillery that they captured. And that was called the Battle of Assunpink Creek. And it was kind of in the afternoon. And Cornwallis, the British commanding officer, the general, decides he's going to attack the Americans the next day. And when the British came down, they came down, they didn't come down all at once. They came down in wagon train, on horses, marching. So they were continuously coming down. So that happened on January 2nd. So Washington told all, it became nightfall. They just kept a skeleton crew at Trenton that night. He said, hey, make a lot of noise, big fires, all this. So in the middle of the night, he takes the entire army and goes to Princeton, and they attack the rear guard of the British army that was going to Trenton on the next day, January 3rd, and that was the Battle of Princeton. There's a lot more detail to that, too, but there was,
Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, there was, so that's two huge victories for the Americans at the end of, end of 1776, beginning of 1777. And it basically, the whole time frame, it turned the tide of the American Revolution. It's like, hey, we could win this. They were able to get a lot more enlistments. And that's the story.
Excellent. So we put it in very good perspective. I really enjoyed this because, a lot of the time we just hear all this stuff in a vacuum, but putting sort of a path for the soldiers and for the battles themselves is definitely useful. And I hope everybody, I want to have Sal back. I want to have you back again so we could talk about the next few battles or whatever you wish, but I'm going to make sure I put your info up. And that would be beneficial because certainly we can't stop at one show with this. It would certainly be interesting to hear more in the future.
Yeah, this is 1776 or a piece of it. The end of 1776, beginning of 1777.
Yes. So now we're at the new year, and maybe next time around we'll pick up with that. But in the meantime, everybody out there should definitely, when you're in White Plains, I mean, check out the monuments. Check out Purdy House. Because they have not just Revolutionary War, but they have some very interesting history on the city of White Plains as well in there. The Historical Society is based in that building. So you get sort of two for one and I think it's by appointment now, but it's definitely a worthwhile visit.
Yeah, they've done a terrific renovating that building. Because I saw photographs of it, the condition it was in before the renovations in the 70s, and I was like, whoa, I couldn't believe they were going to demolish it. And they did a really great.
I read that.
Yeah.
They actually, I believe they renovated it twice in the 60s, and after the move, they had to kind of do a few more things, but now it's, and they've preserved much of it. So it's not just all, false work. It's really the authentic structure preserved as well as they could.
Right, and it. And the other cool part is it's still on the same property as the Purdy Farm, and it was an actual, and it has a very nice view overlooking the city.
Yes, and that's another reason I recommend going there. And it's actually good to go there in the winter when there's no trees. You could see the city a lot better.
Right. No, I believe that. Yeah. No, I remember going there. It was a nice.
Yeah, yeah. And going to Sal's shop is also very nice if you're in the Kent, Connecticut area. I actually enjoyed being there to rent a bicycle from you because you have some good pieces of memorabilia and you have some good bicycles too.
Well, thank you. No, I appreciate that, Anthony.
Okay.
I'm glad that you had a good time too.
Yeah, definitely. And I'll be back for both this and for the bikes one day. And people can't hear us now because we're over the limit, but you will be able to hear this part of the show on the archive. So we'll leave it at that. And I want to thank you for being with us, Sal. I'm going to put up links to where people can listen to this archive show in the future. If you want to spread the word, and I certainly will. And it'll be a nice little education for an hour for people.
That's great. Thank you so much.
All right. Thank you, Sal. Take care.
Okay. You too.
And thanks everyone else who was listening for listening to Blog Talk Radio. And we'll hope to have some more historical based shows like this that people can sort of bind their surroundings, their local surroundings, in whether it's the White Plains area or Manhattan or Connecticut, to parts of history. And take care and good night, everyone.
Join hand in hand, brave Americans all, and rouse your bold hearts at fair liberty's call. No tyrannous axe shall suppress your just name, or stain with dishonor America's name. In freedom we're born, and in freedom we'll live. Our purses, they are ready, steady friends, steady. Not as slaves, but as free men, our money will give. Our worthy forefathers, let's give them a cheer. To climates unknown did courageously steer. Through oceans to deserts for freedom they came. And dying bequeathed us the freedom and fame. In freedom we're born, and in freedom we'll live. our purses, they are ready. Steady, friends, steady. Not as slaves, but as free men, amen.